Welcome into Uncovering Success. My name is Brady Slaybaugh. I appreciate you. Thank you for coming along on this journey with me. If you haven't had a chance yet, go hit the subscribe button. If you're on Spotify, go follow and leave me a rating there. I really appreciate it. So my guest today is Ryan Taggart. Ryan is the principal at Sugar Creek Garraway High School in Northeast Ohio. He's been a very successful golf coach, number one. So we kind of take a deep dive into his teams and how they became what they were. He also works with my dad's basketball team. My dad has had a very successful team over the last 10 to 20 years. And especially over the last few years, he's had a vital role in working with them, doing some life coaching, self-development stuff. That's really brought the team closer together. We also talk about how he has handled COVID, the effects of COVID in their school, and what it meant for those seniors last year, the 2020 seniors, and how they were able to kind of incorporate them. This was filmed a few months ago, so he kind of was able to give us a really good deep dive in the moment of how they were handling that. Without further ado, let's get into it.
You don't set out to build a wall. You don't say, I'm going to build the biggest, baddest, greatest wall that's ever been built. You don't start there. You say, I'm going to lay this brick as perfectly as a brick can be laid. There will not be one brick on the face of the earth that's going to be laid better than this brick that I'm going to lay in this next 10 minutes. Yeah. And you do that every single day.
And soon you have a wall.
Today with me, I've got currently the principal at Garraway Local Schools, and kind of looking forward to hearing your story. This is Ryan Taggart.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I got hired 17 years ago to be a teacher, and I always wanted to be a coach. Dad was a coach, so I had that, and in my mind, I was going to be a basketball coach. That's what I was going to be. And that was kind of my passion growing up, was playing. And so I go interview for this job, Garraway, February. Basically, they needed a guy to be an assistant golf coach. And I tried to play in college, wasn't good enough, didn't want to work at it to get to the level I needed to be to compete. And so I quit playing golf. And they're like, if you want the job, we want to hire you, but we need you to do this. So there we are. So I got my start coaching golf. I was a JV coach for 2 years. The head coach resigned after five seniors and the head coach all left together, and they had just won the first state title in school history in any sport in 04. Wow. So in 05, I step in. And, you know, I'm competitive. Like, I mean, that's
you were a basketball coach before, right?
Yeah.
You had helped out there.
So I helped out with freshman boys basketball my first year. And then I started coaching girls my second year of teaching. And then I coached with Scott Bardall and the girls for 10 years. And so that was interesting. But with the golf, I mean, I had Kevin Miller, who was a freshman. He was tiny. I mean, he was hitting, I think he carried 3 hybrids, a driver, and a 3-wood in his bag. And ended up runner-up at the state tournament. We missed the state tournament by like 4 or 5 strokes. I mean, we were right there.
So you lost 5 coming into your head. How many kind of returners did you have on that
game? We had no returning lettermen. And we had like Tyler Gerber, who, I mean, he was a competitor. And then we had Kevin, who was a freshman. We had some other just pieces that were going to fit nice to a puzzle. But at that time, again, I was more on the product than the process. Like, I didn't care. I think I emphasized the performance way more than the person. And I know I did at that time. So we missed the state tournament. Season falls short. The next year, Kevin, as an individual, finished second the freshman year, and then the next year, we missed it again. Same type of story, like right there. And like, I'm like, man, nobody works harder than us. I mean, we put in more hours than anybody in the summer. We do everything right. So Johnstown Monroe had gone, and they had won the Division II state tournament, And then the next year they had just qualified for the Division III. And we're pulling out of Cumberland Trails in the van. And I mean, we're pulling out of the parking lot. I did a circle and said, hey, I got to go in and do something. And when I walked into the clubhouse, I wanted to talk to those guys. I wanted to find out, what do they do that I don't? So I went in and they're sitting there at the table. And I asked John Carlisle was the head coach at the time. And Alan Cassie was the assistant. And I said, what are you guys doing that I'm not? I mean, we've had two really talented teams perform poorly on this stage. And mm-hmm. I just remember they said, you're a basketball coach, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And they said, you've got to give them some time. I said, I don't know what you mean. Well, think about it. When did your kids start playing golf this year? I was like, oh, probably March, end of March. And do you guys do anything in the off season? I was like, yeah, we lift, we work out. Okay, they need you need to teach them balance. It's not something I'm very good at, even as a 39-year-old.
Yeah, same.
And so I'm like, all right. So I'm driving home with the team, and like we took some time off, and then I started having meetings with the kids, and we started doing spring meetings. Like, what are your goals? You know, what do you want to do? And a lot of kids would come up like, I want to average 75. Okay. How many tournaments do you need to play in? What tournaments do you need to play in? And what's your schedule look like on a weekly basis? And like, I would sit down with the kids and the families and we would just organize it and structure it. Sometimes the families were there, sometimes they weren't. If they wanted to be, I was always open to that. And then we'd sit down again and have the same type of conversation in August. So we're getting ready to start our season. They already had their summer. And it's like, hey, I mean, you wanted to average a 75. You wanted to do this, this, and this each week. What it look like for you this summer?
Because right August when you start school, it's like right into golf, right?
Yeah, we have half of our season is done before the first day of school. And so like we're on it. And what it did more than anything, like the goal stuff was really good. Like that was good. But what it did was it gave me an opportunity to connect with the kids in a way that was meaningful to them. Yeah, it was facilitated around golf, but it was about them as a human being. Like, I had to get better at understanding and valuing the person more than the performance. And when it became more about the person and the relationship, like the performance kind of took care of itself. And it almost became a byproduct of the relationship that we had formed. And some of the things that as coaches you can look for, as parents you can look for. I mean, I've got two children, and my son is way different than my daughter. And they're both great, but they're different. When a kid would hit a bad shot at the district tournament, so we're in our state qualifier, and a kid would hit a bad shot, the first place they would look was me. And that was really uncomfortable for me because I wanted them to know that I was supporting them, whether they hit a good shot or a bad shot. Like, we had haze in the barn. Like, we've done everything we can, you know? But they didn't feel that way. And so I was doing a really ineffective, poor job at supporting kids through their process and their struggle. And therefore, the celebration of their success was kind of hollow for a while. So as we reflected between my second and third year of coaching, and I had a really good assistant in Mike Felton with me, and we would reflect on these things, and we just made a decision. Tyler Gerber, Kevin, some of those kids were really instrumental in this, but we were going to value the person more than the performance. And our practices didn't look any different. I mean, our practices were hard. I mean, before they could even start practice, we have, at the time, we golfed at Willendale, and there were these big rectangle tin yardage signs. And the closest one was 100 yards. And most high school kids hit really good shots when they pull it to the pin. You know, the pin's on the left side, they're trying to hit the middle of the green, and they pull it, right? That's when a high school kid hits a really good shot. Like, for the most part, high school golfers are not great ball strikers yet. A lot of their bodies aren't done growing. Mentally and emotionally, it's really hard to handle the swings of the highs and the lows. And so we had to be great 100 yards and in. So before they could even start practice, I mean, they had to hit the 100-yard sign at least once. And as we became more, like, I mean, just we became better, more skilled, they would have to hit it twice with two different clubs. You know, like, we – and they would get a medium bucket to do it. And so I would get to practice at 3. They were there at 2:40. They were already up there trying to hit the 10 signs. And, like – and they were doing it together. A guy would run out of balls. Somebody else would run to the clubhouse and get him another buck. So they started to value each other more than they did their performance. It didn't become about what you did. It became more about who you are. And we got to help this kid get to where he can, you know, he can get out of his preparation and he can get things out of it that he wants, you know, and that we need.
I see that a lot the same in basketball where whether it's conditioning or someone's not performing well, and you kind of might have one of the guys, two of the guys on the team that aren't quite there physically, and you know maybe they're lagging behind conditioning, right, whatnot, and that's where too. I mean, it's not going to do you any good to harp on that guy and kind of degrade him. It's more worth it in that circumstance to pick him up and bring you with him.
And like I love. After practice in the gym or at the court, I don't, especially in the gym, somebody will be shooting, and I always love to see who's rebounding. You know, because the rebounder, they're not getting a lot out of it, but that they can see, but they're getting a ton out of it because those are great moments to reflect on. Like, you know, Brent, who was rebounding for you after practice, you know, or whatever it is. And for me, as our golfers became more efficient and intentional with staying connected, their performances, it's like the pressure just reduced because they knew no matter if they made the 5-footer or they missed the 5-footer, their person was still going to be loved. They, you know, we loved each other. And to this day, some of my most meaningful relationships are with kids that I coached in those, as I was going through this transformation. I mean, they saw it in me as much as I saw it in them. And so we finish, we end up in 2007. We're at the state tournament. We make it to the state tournament. I mean, there's a story. But so we get there. And I mean, we hadn't been, these kids had never played on that stage. So we broke down the door to get there after the team in 04 did it. And we were down 14 strokes after the first day. So it's a 36-hole event, 2 days. And, I mean, we're in fifth place. I mean, like we're 14 back. And the next day, we start on the back nine. And, I mean, we are on fire. I mean, we're making putts. I mean, we're hitting shots. We're sanding. We're saving shots out of the sand for par. Like, We are playing golf.
One of those days.
Yeah, so we get to 17, which would have been our eighth hole. It's a par three uphill. We're playing at the Scarlet Course in Columbus. And, like, I mean, I can remember it like it was yesterday. So first guy gets up, and, you know, he hits bad shot, ends up taking, like, a double. And then the guys that, you know, that had scored for us are coming through. And so, like, so you got Josh Miller, who was a senior at the time. And he blades one to the back of the green, putts to the front of the green. I mean, he ends up five putting, you know, takes a triple. It's par three. So then Tyler Gerber puts it in the right bunker, chips it over, you know, hits it out of the bunker into the left bunker, ends up making a seven. So then, you know, then Kevin makes par. And, like, Coach Felton and I are walking in the clubhouse to see where we're at after nine holes. And we watched that mess unfold and we're like, it's over. Like, we blew it, you know, we're done. Well, what we didn't know was like that hole actually became a, you know, kind of a rally point for the whole team because there was a backup on 18, which would have been our ninth hole. And you could kind of see each other melt down. And so they rallied. And so we're coming in. And the eighth hole is a par three over water. I mean, we make two birdies and two pars there. And then on 18, I run into the clubhouse to see where we're at. Because they're, you know, everybody else still has three holes left. and that's in contention. And I knew that we put up a good number. Kevin has a 12-footer on. He has to make a par. He has to get up and down to win the individual title. He drains his 12-footer, wins the title. So I give him a hug, and I'm like, hey, you just won. You know, he's like, well, where's the team at? You know, he didn't care. So we get up there, and we ended up winning the state tournament by one stroke. Like, I like that moment for us was huge, and it really gave us a lot of motivation, reassurance, just enthusiasm to continue to value people over performance. And I've talked a lot about performance here because it really was a byproduct of how much we really cared for each other. And then in 08, same type of thing. You know, we go back and bring in a freshman and Jake, you know, so mm-hmm. Kevin and Jake end up playing at the collegiate level. And Jake was a 4-time All-Ohioan. Kevin won the state tournament twice and finished runner up once. So we had some really talented kids. I mean, there's no question. Like, we had some really good golfers, but we end up winning the state tournament again in 08. And then the next 7 years after that, we qualified. So there was a stretch of 9 years where a little public school out of, Sugar Creek ends up really making a name for itself in that capacity. And honestly, it had everything to do with our ability to prepare ourselves mentally and emotionally. Not everybody prepares physically, but mentally and emotionally, we really did some unique things to put ourselves in positions to handle pressure or simulate tough pressure in situations that really didn't matter.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What kind of like maybe one kind of key thing that you guys did to kind of get ready for that? Because, most people, when they get to state or, big game, whatnot, even though you've put in that preparation, that work, mm-hmm. sometimes you haven't quite had enough of those moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on an 18-event calendar for us, it was our season. I mean, winning had to become secondary. Like, and I know, like, a lot of people are watching The Last Dance right now, and like Jordan's talking about winning at all costs. And I mean, it's phenomenal.
That's great.
We just based on our schedule, because the opponent was not, their agenda was different than ours, and so we had to do things to really put ourselves in tough spots. Like, sometimes if there was a 9 o'clock tournament on a Saturday, kids were really comfortable showing up an hour before. Well, sometimes we'd show up, tell them a little different time. Like, we'd show up an hour and a half, so they'd have a half hour trying to figure out what to do with that they had never prepared for, or we'd show up a little later than what they liked. We did things like that. Other times I would tell them, like, we'd be in a match for our conference, and I would tell them, you've got certain clubs you have to tee off with today, or you can only use your driver twice today. And there were two reasons we did that. One, I wanted to see them respond to things they couldn't control in a very positive way. And I mean, you have no control. Once that ball, you have no control where the ball goes. You just can't. You're going to lip out putts. You're going to hit the pin at times and end up 20 feet away. You had a great shot, but those are things we can't control. And we have to really be able to let go of those things and really focus on the things we can. So I wanted them to accept something that wasn't fair, and someone to call it mean. And at first they did not like it. I mean,
I wouldn't have.
The kids didn't like, staring down a par three that's 300 yards, 280, thinking, oh man, if I hit my driver here, I can put it on. But I've got two par fives and I can only use my driver twice today. They didn't like that. But eventually they rallied around it. And it really gave them the opportunity to learn how to manage their game. If you're not good at hitting a 225-yard shot and, you're on a par five and you got 225 yards in, don't hit it. Because you might be mm-hmm. really good at hitting a 60-yard wedge shot. So that if that's your sweet spot, then play to it. So we really worked that way. And it wasn't popular at first, but it really gained momentum.
Yeah, especially because, too, like, as an individual, maybe you want your your average score for the season to be low and whatnot, right. And then you're telling me I can't use the right clubs, right.
and all those things played in. Yeah,
and so that's where it really becomes more about the team and that kind of process than actually the individual.
Yeah. Yeah, the team needs you to make a par. You want to make a birdie, and we had to help them understand that if you have a chance at making a par, or if you make a par, the chances are you had a, an opportunity to make a birdie, and like, but you had to eliminate double bogey. And like, it was tough, but I'm telling you, like, we bought into that. The kids were great. The families really bought into that idea. And we just took off when we started doing those things. Another thing we did we would have to hit, 70 greens in a row. And like, so I would put them at like 55, 75 and 100 yards. And there would be two kids at each spot and one kid hit at a time. And every green that you – all you had to do is hit the green. Like, you didn't have to put it close. You just had to hit the green.
Did you have to stay on the green, or could it roll off or not?
Nope, had to stay on the green. Okay. If it went on the fringe, they had a chance to save par with a up and down. But we would just one at a time. And then we start, and, like, you get to, 45, you want to go home. You know that we've got five left, and you're standing there. That simulated really tournament-like pressure. Yeah. And what would happen – is early on the kid would hit a bad shot and you would just watch the body language. Everybody's head would drop. Mm-hmm. By the end of it, as we developed these relationships and the kids were intentional about it, man, the kid would hit a bad shot and be like, "Hey, you got it. We'll get you. I'll get the next one for you." And like, you really started to feel the energy and the positivity in tough moments. We actually got excited for that. Like, they would wait for me to pick the guy that was going to hit that 70th shot. Well, by the end of it, they were like, "Hey, I got this. And that's what you wanted to see as a coach. You wanted to see us be able to do things that were extraordinary. We would line them up around the chipping green and they had to chip. They had to save par seven consecutive times. And on the seventh one, it had to be a chip in. Wow. And people think that's it's crazy when you, but we did, we were able to do it.
Yeah.
And so
kind of to the parallel, so my dad's been a pretty successful high school girls basketball coach, and they're always so prepared, usually more prepared than the other team, and that's why they've been able to beat better teams than them. But I mean, like, every day at the end of practice, it's a new 7 seconds on the clock, we got to go full court, no timeouts. What are we doing? Or our best player fouled out. Who's in the game here? Who's in this situation? And it's kind of cool to go through that. And in practice, I mean, if you do that five, ten times a season, working on that, and then you get that exact scenario in a game, you know that.
Yeah.
I know where I'm getting my shot. I know I'm going to hit this. And if not, then I know where to be to maybe get a rebound or something like that. And that's why too, I mean, Highlands had some incredible buzzer beaters and stuff like that, but that didn't just happen out of nowhere, out of luck.
Right.
The Seager Boniface shot, I mean, they ran that exact play, 100 times probably that season, because they knew district finals against Rosecrans, they knew they'd have Lutheran East in the regional finals, and then they knew their state games would be tough, and so they were basically more concerned about those games and how to beat those teams than maybe kind of some of the easier games in conference.
Sure. Yeah, like, we didn't win the IVC every year. I mean, Strasburg was very competitive, at the time. But we typically performed really well. I mean, for 9 years, we performed at a very elite level. And in the postseason, I just think kids and athletes and people in general, the more self-aware you are, just your opportunities at performing well under pressure just go way up. Because like some kids, like Brock Beachy, one of my I love Brock, and we knew under pressure his swing speed was going to drop. He was just going to swing slower because he wanted to place it. He wanted to guide it. And so we had to remind him to rip it. When he feels that pressure, you just got to rip it, Brock. And then there were other guys that would, like Ben Koshman, his swing would speed way up. And we're like, "Hey, tempo," But those kids don't realize, they can't perform under pressure well if they're not self-aware enough to recognize why they hit a bad shot. They didn't hit a bad shot under pressure because something happened to them. They hit a bad shot under pressure because something happened because of them and what they did. Like, you know, so.
And two, like with my dad's team, I'll give them like incredible credit because all summer they play the best teams in the state. Yeah. You know, they're a small D4 school and they're playing your huge D1 schools, girls that are going Big Ten, SEC type caliber teams. And then they schedule that too throughout the year. And so, you know, they might have five losses. Mm. But when it comes to those regional final games and the state games, they know what to do, and they also aren't afraid of those kind of competitions and those scenarios, which is it's pretty cool kind of for me to have seen that over like a course of 20 years.
Absolutely. Yeah, what an advantage, you know, just the seat that you've had and the different perspectives that way. And, yeah, I think, you know, working with your dad's teams a little bit, like teams that are well prepared, they play well when they're ready. Like they reach their elite place when they're ready, when all components are ready to perform at that level.
And I mean, for those that don't know, my dad's won I think 4 or 5 state championships and maybe made like 10 or more state appearances. But I will say, kind of watching the team this year, I think that might have been the best team he's ever had. And he's had a lot of really good teams. And if it's not the best, it's top three. But it kind of sucks that they didn't get a chance chance to play that out. But you know, they're gonna be better for that. Better kids, better people down the road, because they saw the type of process that it takes. And I mean, granted, all year they're thinking Afrocentric, Afrocentric, because we know we gotta play them in the state finals.
Right.
And that was about the only team they were focused on. And the fact that they didn't get to play them kind of sucks, but they know and they were ready for that.
And I don't think it was wasted. You know, just being a principal, you hear a lot of things with spring sports, all, you know, their season's wasted and things like that. And it is hard and it's unfortunate. It's the timing of it's awful. There's probably never a good time for it. But as we look back at the end of that winter sports season, you know, they walk away knowing that they're prepared. They were prepared. They know how to prepare. They know how to take ingredients that work for them individually and put it into a recipe that creates success in all kinds of facets of life, not just, you know, on the court or whatever. And ultimately, I think as coaches and as just as adults, that's what we want. You know, we want to mentor people and help them understand that, you know, what you did here to become successful actually will fit into another bill of life. You just got to figure out how to adjust it.
So, I mean, we're recording this right now during the COVID-19 pandemic. And what kind of have you seen that you've had to change, or even like, what was it like dealing with those kids that didn't get their spring sports season, especially like seniors?
Yeah.
And that's kind of all they've thought about for last 10, 15 years of their lives. And then that kind of just gets taken away from them. What has that kind of been like for you?
You know, so we shut down school on a Thursday. I don't remember the date, but it was in March. And I went to pick up pizza that night, and I ran into a parent, and he said, you know, he wasn't being critical or anything. He just said, "I bet you'll have some free time on your hands." And I said, "Well, I, you know, probably not." And he said, "You doing okay?" I said, "This was the saddest day I've ever had in my office." And we knew something, like, you know, we had speculated that at some point there might be an order to, you know, keep kids at home. And in that process of like 3 days where we had tried to prepare our students for it and our staff and families, I mean, I had several students approach me and ask if they could come in anyway, because they just love being at school. And I think human beings were meant to interact with each other. Like we were made that way. And when you pull that component away and isolate and begin isolating people, you know, you're actually exposing or introducing all kinds of things that are very are potentially problematic with, you know, mental and emotional processing to, you know, just all kinds of things. Just there's not a good balance. And as a 39-year-old, you know, man, that's been the most difficult thing for me is it's very difficult for me to shut work off at home. You know, I'm there, but I'm not really present. And so because I have an obsessive compulsive personality, like doing something on the fringe, I'm just not very good at that. I'm either all in or all out. And I like that about me, but it creates a lot of problems sometimes because I just have to be more self-aware.
Sometimes for me, I'm the same way. And I just decide to go all in on too many things. Yeah. And where I know, like, if I had one or two things on my plate that I was all in on, like, I'd crush that.
Yeah.
But when I start to add too much to my plate, that's when, like, those first two things kind of I don't do as well.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
And so I've had to become more self-aware in that fact of, like, starting to say no to things.
Yeah.
And kind of one thing as well that I've told high school kids, I've kind of mentored some the last few summers, and one thing I've told them is that when I went to college, it was a kind of a shock for me to not see my friends every day.
Sure.
Every classroom where I knew everyone at the small school, walking the halls, practice after school every day, hanging out. So for me, when I went to college, it was a big change to kind of go through that process of having to make new friends and kind of not have that comfort around all the time. And that's one thing that I've told them is that when you go to college, you're going to be more prepared for that process and be ready for those kind of changes in your life now that you've gone through something like this.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a really good perspective. And I think we always find what we're looking for. You know, honestly, you know, if in the most difficult scenarios, we can find positivity in those things. We just have to look for it, or the negative will replace it and find us. And
a lot of times you don't want to look for it.
No, that's right. Yeah. You know, you're mad, you're frustrated. So I think with our seniors, with, you know, they have, sacrifice is the thing that I look at what these seniors have offered every community across the country. I mean, they have compromised so many traditional things on their way to graduation for the safety of their schools, their communities, and, you know, the general public. They've said, you know, we're okay not doing this so that we can keep you safe. You know, whether you agree with the perspective of COVID and all of those things, you know, wherever you're at on that, that's what these seniors, they were asked to do things that they didn't necessarily sign up for.
Have any control over.
Yeah. And you know, I'm very proud of, like, I love the Sugar Creek communities, obviously Garraway communities, but I think there's such a sweet spot of traditional, like, I love this area, you know. Highland is the same way, you know. We have a lot of small business that, I mean, our communities, that's how they survive.
Extremely successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On these small businesses. And so seeing our communities rally around this and really try to support, I mean, I know personally of people that would dine, you know, get the dine out stuff, you know, carry out and leave a tip as if they were going to be there for a long period of time. You know, like, we have really, I know both communities have really rallied around and tried to support this as best we can. And our seniors and our students that missed out on some things, there are some really valuable lessons that are hidden in this. And we as adults have to really try to help them sort through and help them find balance, help them find things that are very positive to focus on.
So kind of to wrap up a little bit here, leave us with like a thought of, so you've done some mentoring with teams and such.
Yeah.
What, especially my dad too, you've worked with them. And what is it that you've seen in elite level championship type teams? What do they have that maybe your average teams don't?
I think there are a lot of things that are present in every single team. I mean, every single team has a foundation of ingredients or you know, elements that are the same across the board. you know, there isn't a substitute for some of them. Like, you know, the way you prepare, everybody prepares, right? Mm-hmm. But the way you prepare, there's no substitute for. I would say the ingredient that I would, I mean, it's really hard to put one above the other, but the teams that have really performed well at the most important moments of a season are the teams that are the most connected. Mm-hmm. And that connective tissue that kind of that travels throughout the team, it doesn't leave anyone out. And that's really hard because that means an individual might have to say no to something they want and say yes to something the team needs. Mm-hmm. So sacrifice, yeah, selflessness, sure, all of those things. But getting down to it where you actually have to say no to something that you want so that your team can say yes to something they need, that's probably the ingredient that honestly separates the tiers of teams. And
yeah, I mean, I know too, watching this Jordan doc, watched the last episodes last night, and one thing they didn't talk about but I noticed is that in the last season there, when they had the hard-fought Game 7 series against the Pacers, and now they're getting ready to play the Jazz again for the second year, they knew it's going to be tough, and they're all kind of, they talk about it, getting on the bus, getting on the plane right away, and they're just all drained, physically and mentally drained. And one thing I noticed is that the next day, right after that game, I mean, Jordan is everywhere, talking to every player, getting them fired up, cracking jokes in practice, running. he's in practice running around and kind of being that guy, that light that they needed right then to energize them and get them going. I thought that was a pretty sweet, and that's kind of what those kind of caliber teams need.
It is so hard because, like, he wanted Rodman to be at practice, you know?
Yeah.
He wanted guys to have that same competitive fire that he had. So it was either be angry and frustrated with it or nurture them along to get the most out of them as he possibly could.
And kind
of
by the end, they realized that, you know, for Rodman's, for him to be his best and his best mental and physical health, sometimes he just needed a 24-hour hiatus where no one knew where he was.
Yep. Absolutely.
Because that's just kind of the way his mind works.
Yeah. And like, I don't get to decide what's best for you, right? You get to decide that, and then I get to decide if I want to support that or if I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's, I'm telling you, if that's the connective tissue that has to be spread and intertwined throughout every single member of the team.
So what do you think kind of going forward from my age, 22, either just out of college, just getting out of high school, going into college, or kind of in that age group, what is success going to look like down the road? And how is that going to be different than what it might look like for someone who's 60 right now?
Boy, I don't know. Success is such a it's such a relative term in a sense, you know. Like, but I think there are going to be things that change, obviously with society and societal trends and things. But I do think there are some things that are just going to be the same. And you know, accountability is something that it's necessary for success. And the problem is, you can't hold people accountable that you don't have relationships with, or else they're going to rebel. And so I would just encourage everyone to be very aware of themselves and what motivates them. Like, what drives me? What do I want and what do I need? And understand the difference. Create a plan. You know, like understand that every time I get tested, I'm going to fail. And then when I fail, if I there's a moment that I can learn from that. And then I can improve. And then when I re-enter that testing phase again, I'm a better product than what I was the time before. Those things are never going to change, even though society is going to look different moving forward. But having a plan, being self-aware, and just being very aware of who you surround yourself with. It's easy to learn from your failure when you're around people that want to learn from their failure.
Yes, definitely.
You know, and success and failure, it's such a hard thing. I just know that the reason that your dad some of the most successful people that we know, the teams that I coached, they failed so many times. I mean,
most people don't see that.
Yeah. Your individual skill challenges at practice, we had more kids fail those than succeed in every single season. The team challenges, we failed those more than we did succeed. But they learned how to compete through that. And that's what allowed them to experience a level of success that was very special and unique.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. That's great. That's great insight. And I appreciate you sitting down with me today. Yeah. We've had some really good discussion that I know kind of the people on this journey with me are going to get a lot out of. So I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on today.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is awesome. I'm excited for you. I'm very proud of you. I hope this thing really takes off.
So you just heard my interview with Ryan Taggart. I really hope you're able to take something away from it. There was a lot of good stuff in there. And I would encourage you to one by one, step by step, start to implement some of those things into your own teams and your own leadership styles. I know for me personally, I really enjoyed the different ways that he put his players in unfamiliar positions on and off the course. You know, when it came time for the big stage, they were ready, whether they had seen it or not before, because they were put in those difficult positions. If you haven't had a chance yet, go subscribe, follow, leave me a rating. I really appreciate it. If you want to find me on Instagram, my username is @BradyReese with an underscore. Find me on LinkedIn, connect there, Twitter, all of it. I appreciate it and looking forward to next week. We'll be right back.